This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Nancy Altman's on the line with us. She's the president of Social Security Works. She's the chair of Strengthening Social Security. She's the author of three books, including her latest, The Truth About Social Security, The Founder's Words Refute Revisionist History, which we did a book report on a week or so ago. SocialSecurityWorks.org, of course, is the website, and you can tweet at SSWorks. Nancy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a while. I love your book. I absolutely love your book. And I in particular liked chapter 5 in the immortal words of Yogi Berra. This is deja vu all over again. And you talk about, you know, Social Security, and then you talk about the tiny splinter group with oversized influence. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. There's always been, from the beginning, even before Social Security was enacted, what President Dwight Eisenhower labeled a tiny splinter group, who he described as their number is negligible and they are stupid. They've always hated Social Security. That goes against about 90% of the American public, who no matter how you slice the population, Tea Partiers, union members, women, men, people of color, everyone, really support Social Security, would like to see it expanded, not cut. In the early days, the people who hated it were honest about it. They called it socialism. They said this is not appropriate for the government and so on. Today, even the opponents say, we love Social Security, but it's just we can't afford it. And that's why I wrote The Truth About Social Security, because the truth is, we can afford it so much more now than we could back in 1935. We should be expanding it, not cutting it. The question about whether to expand or cut Social Security is a question of values, not affordability.
And the other argument that these guys are making is, oh, it's falling apart, it's not working. I mean, they've kind of stopped the it's a Ponzi scheme rhetoric because they know that people aren't buying it. But I believe in the last, I'm not sure if it was the tax scam bill or it was one of the budget bills that were passed just before that, but they cut several hundred million dollars out of the Social Security budget to scale back on the basically the number of employees that Social Security can have to make their service to us worse. So that, you know, the whole neoliberal strategy has four parts to it. Number one, defund federal agencies or state agencies or whatever, defund public properties. Number two, create a problem or a crisis. Number three, scream about the crisis. And number four, offer privatization as the solution and somebody makes a profit. Where are we at with that right now? How successful are they being at chopping away the support structure of Social Security so that people will be increasingly inclined to say, oh, it's a pain in the butt, it's a huge hassle, I'd really rather deal with Citibank?
You know, you are exactly right, and these lines of attack, and it's one of the reasons I call this a lot of what's gone through the history of Social Security is zombie lies, because it's whack-a-mole. You hit one down, and so, okay, they Ponzi scheme doesn't work. Okay, let's cut the Social Security offices. Okay, there's a big uproar about that. Let's say we can't afford it, we have to privatize it. It's just these, we knock them down and they keep coming back. So you were exactly right that there have been these, there are a couple things that are going on now. The Republicans vastly increased the deficit by their these huge tax giveaways to the extremely wealthy. And before the ink was even dry, even though Social Security is self-financed, doesn't add a penny to the deficit, even before the ink was dry, they said, okay, well, we got this deficit, we're going to have to cut Social Security. So that's one line of attack. Another is, as you say, we have a population that's aging. We should be opening field offices. Instead, the Republicans have strangled the budget of the Social Security Administration, and it's very important to understand that the money we contribute to Social Security, which currently has a $2.9 trillion surplus in its accumulated reserve. That doesn't just pay our benefits. That also pays for all the field offices, for the employees that work there, for the telephones, for the computers. And so, again, it doesn't contribute a penny to the deficit, but Congress limits how much Social Security Administration can pay. So people with disabilities, there's a huge backlog. We find the Washington Post reported that 10,000 people died a year ago simply waiting to get a final determination about their earned Social Security benefits. That's just an outrage. People are going homeless. People are going bankrupt. We should be, as I say, expanding Social Security administration, expanding offices. And as an aside, there's an overall attack on the civil service, an effort to really politicize the civil service, make it easier to fire, make them really patronage jobs. And that is a direct attack on our earned Social Security benefits.
Yeah, we're talking with Nancy Altman. Her new book, The Truth About Social Security, is brilliant. Nancy, I want to play a clip for you from Franklin Roosevelt and just get your thoughts on it. This is just a short little 1 minute from a speech, I believe. Well, I don't have the year here in front of me. So anyhow, here it is. This is FDR.
Great.
Let me warn you and let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things. We believe in Social Security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
Now, Nancy, that was the 1930s, right?
And that is correct. Franklin Roosevelt and the people around him were visionary. They had a really bold concept of improving our security, both our physical security, winning World War II, and our economic security. He also really understood the American people. And he, a few months before Social Security was introduced in Congress, he warned the American people that they were going to hear all kinds of things, that it was, it was socialism, it was fascism, it was this, it was that. And he warned people, don't be fooled. This is just fear-mongering. And the same thing you heard, the clip you just played, that could have been played today.
Yep.
They could have been referring to Paul Ryan and Donald Trump and the whole crew of them, the tiny splinter group that President Eisenhower warned us about.
Yeah. So do you see how do you see the future of Social Security? I mean, are we to the point where it's hanging on a thread based on which party controls Congress and the White House, or is it still fairly robust?
Well, it's definitely the strongest thing Social Security has for it is it has got the American people behind it. The will of the people is to expand, not cut, Social Security. The problem is the tiny splinter group that President Eisenhower talked about have oversized power because they are literal billionaires. I mean, the Koch brothers are pouring in huge fortune to try to elect people who are against Social Security. Pete Peterson, before he passed away, another billionaire, set up a foundation which is with us now. In fact, a number of the groups that are anti-Social
Security. Right. And he was a Wall Street billionaire. I mean, and Wall Street would be the direct beneficiary if Social Security were to go down in flames.
Absolutely.
I don't understand why Americans don't put two and two together on this.
Absolutely. The amount of money that goes from Social Security to Wall Street, zero. It's run by civil servants, and more than 99 cents of every dollar is returned in benefits to the American people. That would not happen with Wall Street. You'd see, you know, 20% going to Wall Street, if not more.
Yeah, just so like we have with our health insurance.
Yeah, and it's what happens with 401ks and mm-hmm. private pensions.
Yep.
So as long as the American people are alert and vote their pocketbook on this, we'll be fine. The good news is that the party of Franklin Roosevelt, the Democratic Party, has really rediscovered its roots. They are now on record for expanding, not cutting Social Security. They're on record for Medicare for All. They're on record for...
It's great stuff. Nancy, we're hitting the break here, but thank you so much for writing this brilliant book and for coming on our program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nancy Allman, her new book, The Truth About Social Security.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Stick around. And welcome back. Mike in Oakland, California. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Mike?
I'm good. Hey, look, I wanted to talk about the unions. Mm-hmm. I'm 71, and I got in a union in 1966 when I got out of high school. And the only reason why I'm in Oakland now is because it was so corrupt till...
Till what? Mike, you're...
And I had to come out to Oakland, but I wanted to give this information package to the people out there. Mm-hmm. You can't give up.
Yeah.
Labor's Untold Story by Richard O. Boyle.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard.
I have not.
It's a great book. I beg your pardon?
I have not. I'm not familiar with it. Labor's Untold Story by Richard O. Boyle? B-O-Y-L-E?
Boyer.
I'm sorry?
Boyer. B-O-Y-R-E-R.
Oh, okay. Boyer. Got it.
And Herbert M. Morales.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, these guys are from it's 100 years ago in Chicago doing the stockyards. And I had to take this course down at the trade school in Chicago, and they recommended the Savitz. It's called The Jungle. It's about meat cutting.
Oh, by Sinclair Lewis.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah, it's about the meatpacking.
About meatpacking, yes.
Yeah.
So I had an idea what I wanted to get into. I was only 21. So I had an idea what I wanted to get into, but I didn't know about unions. The unions only saved me after I came to Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working pretty steadily until I got hurt. I'm on disability and stuff now, but it's okay. I'm doing great as far as my family and stuff. But on the unions, they paid for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got hurt here, the union was the only thing that helped me. I'm not going to mention who I work for, but there used to be a family situation, and then they said, let's be neighbors since we're friends, those people. And I want to say that if you're not in a union, you better join one or some type of co-op. That's the only way that the working man is really going to make it during these times. It's family. You have to trust your family and make it grow, make it work. And don't forget your civics. Teach these kids about civics now. If it's not in the schools, get it back in there.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Run for the school board. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Great, great points all. Very, very well made. Jack in Auburn, California. Hey, Jack, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. You want to talk? You want to talk about Fifth Amendment defenses?
Well, I just want to make a quick point with Trump's lawyers coming on TV and framing this as a perjury trap. I want to say I think they're really framing an informal argument of the Fifth Amendment, saying that if Trump answers questions, he will tend to incriminate himself.
Yeah, what Giuliani is essentially saying is Trump is a notorious pathological liar. And if he has to testify under oath, he's in all probability going to lie, because that's what he does. I mean, the Washington Post has documented this. On an average day, he lies between 8 and 12 times, depending on which month it is. And so, of course he's going to lie. I just think, Mueller should issue a subpoena. But.
Well, what I would like to see myself personally is for the honest media to reframe that argument and basically say it is an informal blanket attempt at using the Fifth Amendment. And that, of course, carries with it sort of a negative connotation. And that's, I really believe that's what they're doing.
Especially for conservatives. Interesting point, Jack. And well said. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. It is, 21 minutes past the hour. Back with more of your calls and the news of the day and a couple of good rants from me coming up. Stick around. There's a bunch of news of the day that I just haven't had an opportunity to get to. I'm going to do so here for a little bit, and then I'll pick up your phone calls at the bottom of the hour. Evan Greer with fightforthefuture.org. And fightforthefuture.org is a site worth tracking and keeping, knowing what's going on there. Evan's been a guest. She's been on this program many times. She sent this email out that says, hi, a lot happening. The California bill to restore net neutrality, Senate Bill 822, this is in the California legislature, in the California Senate, has been reintroduced and is heading for an assembly vote in the next couple of weeks. Fight for the Future has launched a new scoreboard showing the faces of every California assembly member and whether or not they've supported the bill yet. They've also announced plans to target crowd-funded billboards exposing any assembly member who sides with the telecom company and stands in the bill's path. You can find all this at fightforthefuture.org. And, so this is, another chance. Because it's just like emission standards. If California goes with net neutrality, then the internet service providers are going to have to sit up and take notice. They're going to have to start providing net neutrality. I mean, it's just that simple, right? This is another piece. This is the headline. Laura Clausen over at Daily Kos writing about it. A new 20% tax break for rich people is up for grabs, and Treasury is making sure Trump benefits. This idea that was explored by the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, that they should index capital gains to inflation. In other words, if you buy stock, if you bought stock last year, say $1,000 worth of stock, and this year it's worth $1,010. You've got a $10 profit. But they'd say, inflation knocks a dollar off that, so you really only have a $9 profit. So you only have to pay capital gains taxes on $9. So what it does is it essentially reduces capital gains taxes. Capital gains taxes are that tax rate that is specially for capitalists. Capitalists have their very own tax rate. And you and I do too, I suppose. Working people who get a salary, have our very own tax rate. It's much higher than the capitalist tax rate. Surprise, surprise. Why are we doing this? I don't know. Actually, I do know. It's because the capitalists basically control the system and certainly have in the past. So now, in order to get Trump behind this thing, the Treasury Department, Steve Mnuchin, has come up with a rule that says that this pass-through capability that is in addition to the indexed to inflation capital gains, that they're going to extend this to pass-through corporations like these sub-S corporations, where the business, the small business in quotes, actually is treated as if it were an individual taxpayer. Donald Trump has hundreds of these companies that make up the Trump Organization. And they're quite common. I mean, parts of Koch Industries are pass-through corporations. So what he's saying is that you're going to get a super low tax rate if your pass-through corporation has to do with you being a brand. Now, this will benefit authors, right? I'm a brand. My books sell because my name is on them. And so I will get a lower tax rate on the income that I get from writing books if Donald Trump's proposal, or if Steve Mnuchin's proposal is passed, if Donald Trump gets behind this thing and pushes it and the Republicans pass it. Donald Trump will get a massively low tax rate because everything Donald Trump does has his name on it, right? His name is the brand. And this is the provisional law appears to allow a company, this is from the Treasury, this is over at Daily Kos, to allow a company to earn some of its income by licensing its owner's name to apply the 20% deduction to other income that does not flow from licensing. This could be important for Mr. Trump, whose companies have licensed the Trump name, etc. So, bizarre stuff. I mean, the Steve Mnuchin and the Republicans have figured out that they've got to give things to Trump if they want him to get behind them. They figured out that Donald Trump is so greedy, so self-centered, so narcissistic, that if there's not something in it for him directly, and this is how they did the tax scam, he got a multi-hundred million dollar tax break in all probability from the GOP tax scam. If it doesn't benefit Donald Trump directly, he's not going to get behind it, because all he cares, he doesn't give a damn about the country, he cares about himself. And the Trump crime family, of course. So, hey, in this most callous, bizarre, cynical move, they have said, okay, we're going to make it so that Donald Trump gets a 20% tax write-off for using his name. Isn't that cool? It's bizarre.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And as I said, I would get some benefit from this, but I'd frankly much rather see the money go to roads, bridges, and food stamps. We'll be back. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. I keep talking about how the Democratic Party is, I used to say it needs to, now it actually is going back to its FDR roots. And as such, and frankly, you know, rather than saying, hey, I'm a Democratic Socialist, I'd rather say I'm an FDR Democrat. I think they're the same thing, but I think I'm an FDR Democrat probably would poll better. You know, more people would understand what you're talking about. And so, you know, in that vein, I just have two very short clips from Franklin Roosevelt that I wanted to share with you. The first is how he talks about, is where he talks about the danger of big money getting into politics, the danger of billionaires and big corporations owning politicians and thus thinking that the government is theirs. Here he is.
We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob.
And that's what we have right now. I mean, you've got billionaires in the cabinet, Betsy DeVos, Wilbur Ross, Donald Trump is a billionaire. Pretty much everybody else in the cabinet is, if not a billionaire, certainly a multimillionaire. And you've got billionaires financing virtually the entire Republican Party. You've got, you know, giant corporations that are inserting themselves into political campaigns. We now have government by organized money, and the Trump campaign is the peak of this. And there is a widespread wave across the United States that's sweeping both parties. And frankly, Trump ran on this platform, right? I'm going to drain the swamp. You know, there's too much corruption in Washington, D.C. But he is the corruption in Washington, D.C. I mean, he brought it into the White House with the whole, you know, the Scott Pruitt and let's reinvent the EPA so that the Koch brothers are happy and all this other stuff. It really is government by organized mob. And then, you know, also, what do we really value as a people, as a nation? What does it mean to be an American? What do we value? Here's FDR again on that. Hang on just a second.
Yeah, the measure of that restoration lies in the extent to which we apply social values, more noble than mere monetary profit. Happiness lies not in the mere possession of money. It lies in the joy of achievement, in the thrill of creative effort, the joy, the moral stimulation of work, no longer must be forgotten in the mad chase of evanescent profits.
There you go. In the mad chase of evanescent profits. When was the last time you even heard the word evanescent? Wow. Anyhow, Marta in Big Bear Lake, California. Hey, Marta, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to connect undocumented immigrants to NAFTA. And I think the Democrats might learn, you know, and we might have a more progressive trade policy. What happened in 1994 when NAFTA went into effect is our corporations and banks began to take over. They flooded Mexico with Walmart products and Iowa corn, and they put a million farmers off their land.
Mexican farmers,
and
yep.
Family members, and Walmart put millions of craftspeople out of their multi-generational crafts, you know, that's all they knew.
Right, here in the United States, yep.
Our toilet paper companies went down there and took over their indigenous forests that, you know, now the people had no forest to get their food from. And our banks went down there and got people on credit cards. We are, in large part, responsible for what goes on in the world. And I'm asking, and I hope that you will, you know, keep informing us, but what do the Democrats want? What is our trade policy? Because all I hear on mainstream media is we need to protect the Iowa soy farmers. Well, you know what? Cash crops are not healthy anyway. Right. And why are they not talking about the thousands of small farmers that have been taken over and put out of business by Monsanto and, you know, all these huge agribusiness corporations? And if they try to grow organic, then Monsanto sues them. And, you know, it's like they can't afford 10 years in court with their attorney fees and everything, so they lose their family farms. So the media has the violence out for the soy farmers, the poor soy farmers, but they're not talking about the millions, you know, 65,000 factories that were lost in, you know, because of NAFTA and the WTO. What do you think?
No, I agree with you, and I would add to that that soy is by and large used as feed for animals. And, you know, so it's a subsidy of animal agriculture, which is one of the things that's killing this planet. And if those Iowa farmers were to stop growing soy and start growing fruits and vegetables, then
right.
we would all be healthier, they would be more profitable, and Monsanto would be SOL. They'd be in big trouble. And that's probably why it's not happening right now. Plus, they'd have to engage in regenerative agricultural practices. I mean, they'd have a whole bunch of smaller crops that they could rotate and things and keep the soil healthy rather than this extractive agricultural practice of just pulling all the nutrients out of the soil and replacing them with just, you know, phosphorus and nitrogen. And NAFTA is responsible for a large chunk of that. I remember also the other thing that is responsible for a large part of it, Marta, is Reagan's policies in 82 when he stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. And the result of that was not only an explosion of mergers and acquisitions and a consolidation across the landscape. We have about half as many publicly traded companies right now as we had then. It's, you know, at every level, I talked about this a couple days ago, you know, at every level it's been corrosive and destructive to the United States. But in addition to that, when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, these big ag companies came in and started buying up farms. And the farmers, and I remember I was living in Michigan at the time, and we saw this happening. We were living in New Hampshire, actually, by that time when Reagan came in. But you could see it happening all across the country, that people who had been farming for 5-10 generations were suddenly, you know, had to sell their farms and became sharecroppers, became tenant farmers. They were renting their house and their land from the big agricultural companies and working their butts off, you know, without making the profits. The profits were going to the big companies. And this is when Willie Nelson started Farm Aid. Remember that?
Exactly. And you know what? You are talking about Mexico and the farmers there, and
yep.
you're linking that to the farmers in the U.S. And in neither case are, you know, the people voting for these horrendous policies. We don't want them. So what is, you know, what can the Democrats do? Because Trump took the fair trade narrative because the Democrats didn't have, you know, in my opinion, didn't have a good trade policy. It's like, you know, they've just surrendered the whole issue of trade to the neoliberal Republicans, and now the media is taking the neoliberal Republican line. What can we do to renegotiate NAFTA for human rights, environmental rights, a trade that's good for Americans and Mexicans?
Yeah, well, Trump is renegotiating it right now. I don't think that environmental rights and human rights are high on his list, but he is all about raising wages. We'll see what happens. I'm skeptical that he can pull it off, and I'm skeptical that even if he does do what Robert Lighthizer is suggesting, which is actually reasonably good policy, I'm skeptical that the Republicans in Congress will go along with it. So we'll see. I mean, this is, Sherrod Brown has been one of the real leaders on this. The Democrats, particularly the Progressive Caucus, have been pushing basically, you know, this policy of we need to abandon these so-called free trade policies. They're not free, and they're not really trade. They're managed trade. Well, they are trade. They're managed trade. They're managed to the benefit of the corporations and to the detriment of the farmers, the American farmers, the Mexican farmers, and to workers all over the country. So yeah, spot on. Marta, thank you for the call. You know, very well said. Christy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Christy, you wanted to tell us about a website?
Yeah, earlier you were speaking with someone about wanting to have a centralized website to find out about voter registration as you're registered and, you know, how handy that would be. And there actually is one that exists. It's called vote.org.
I'm there right now. Interesting.
Okay.
Are you registered? Yeah. How about that?
I don't know if
now,
you guys have
are you sure that this is not
that, but.
You're sure that this is not an organization that's just basically harvesting our information because it wants my home address, my first and last name, my email address, my cell phone number, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it, I did it. I'm not sure if it does harvest the information, but it was able to tell me whether or not I was registered and where I was registered for.
Yeah, I'm going to their terms of service. Third-party links, personal information, governed by our privacy policy. Well, I'd have to spend some time reading it, but you know, because I'm, yeah. Forgive me for being skeptical. There's a zillion scams out there.
Understandable.
But on the other hand, it looks like, I mean, it starts out with a quote from FDR. So I will suspend my disbelief for the moment, and thank you for that. That might be a great resource. I'll dig into it after we get off the air. Christy, thank you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Great talking with you. Thank you. Let's see here. JC in San Francisco, listening on 910 Real Talk. Hey, JC, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I have a solution for the hiring practices in this country and the immigration process that's been dysfunctional under Trump. And it's a simple solution. When I worked in Las Vegas back in 01 to 03, I was required, because I worked in hospitalities and restaurants and hotels, I was required to have five cards, they're called work cards there, on my possession at all times. And I had to, you know, go through a process to get all this stuff. But one of them was the sheriff's card. And the sheriff's card, none of these cards were ever enforced. No one ever came. You know, I was told, oh, you always have to have these on you, or it's a $500 fine, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, long story short, is there 6,600 plus sheriffs and counties in the United States. And if we add enforcement to a sheriff's card system, where if you're working on a job site and you don't have a sheriff's card and you can't produce one within, say, 30 days, then the employer gets fined for it. Hmm. And this would go to your meme, which is we don't have an illegal employee problem. We have an illegal employer problem. And the whole system of enforcement is already, the infrastructure is already there. You know, except in California, we have to pass a law to, you know, probably to get it all mandated and stuff. But
wasn't the purpose of the sheriff's card, JC, in Vegas to that they'd run a background check on you and that you were safe to work in a casino or you know, in the hospitality industry in Las Vegas, which is tied in with the casinos, because you were of good moral character?
Well, you know, that's the implication. I had a gaming card, a sheriff's card, a food handler's card, a techniques and alcohol management card, and my ID, Nevada State driver's license. And, that's what they imply. I don't know what exactly, but basically, if my approach to it would be if you lie on the application, that would be the only time you could be subject to prosecution, is the person applying for the sheriff's card might get a $500 fine or, you know.
Yeah. I think, you know, the standard we have right now is that you have to have a card. It's the Social Security card. And they can check your Social Security number. This is this instant check number that the federal government put into place back, you know, decades ago. And employers can check and see if somebody's Social Security number actually, if they are actually them. And I think that we should expand that. But I get your point. I mean, this is kind of a variation on that. But your point is well taken, JC. Thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening to us on 910 AM in San Francisco.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls right after this brief interruption. Stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Charles, watching us on YouTube in Southgate, California. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I don't know. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, you're talking about racism and all that kind of stuff. I live in a town where, like, I'm like the 1%. You know what I mean?
I don't know what
and
you mean.
So, well, everybody else is Latino.
Oh, okay. So you're the only white guy in your neighborhood? Is that what you're saying?
Well, my neighborhood, my city, my community, all mm-hmm. that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, occasionally I run into people that, like, are scared of me. Occasionally I run into people that, like, hate me. But most of the time I don't experience most of that because, you know, it doesn't seem to be important to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really think that, you know, if you're going to get right down to it, that we've lost a lot of our empathy for other human beings.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right.
That's what we need. That's what we need, but you can't teach that.
Yeah.
You can't instill
I think
that.
You can teach it, Charles. I think you can teach it by example. You teach it with words. You teach it by exposure to people who are not like you. I mean, you know, I think you can teach it. And I think we all need to be teaching it to everybody we know, particularly to our kids and our friends.
Well, I think you have to do that all the time then.
Yeah, yeah, it's the way we live. It has to be. But that's fascinating. Charles, thank you for sharing that with us. That's a nice note. Jill in Princeton, Minnesota. Hey, Jill, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching
us on
Free Speech TV. I'm well. What's up?
Well, I think, can you hear me well?
Just fine, yeah.
Oh, great. We have great callers. I'm going to try to say what I think is going on, and I think that the owners of the world have a stronghold on us, and we're seeing great effects. Climate change, we're seeing starvation, disease, and I can say that. The reason I'm saying it is because I'm sitting here in Minnesota
mm-hmm.
comfortably,
right?
You know, with woods and...
You still there, Jill?
Needs, pardon me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It sounded like you dropped out.
What I wanted to say is, yes, there is a stronghold, and the very few, are trying as best they can to keep their own and keep what they want to themselves and the hell with everybody else. And what democracy is the vast majority of us waking up, and this is what is happening. And as I see this, it feels like a fist struggling, and people are hurting, and we need to remember the people that are hurting for whatever reason.
Yeah, amen.
And we do that by talking like we're doing, and well, move to amend is one great way to do it.
Yep. Jill, we're hitting a break here. I got to wrap it up, but thank you. You know, it was a great segue from Charles's point as well. Thank you, Jill. And thanks for watching us on Free Speech. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations, we'd really rather you didn't know all about. Tom Hartman here with you. Rob in Long Island, New York. Hey, Rob, thanks for listening to us on Sirius XM. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I apologize for being late to the party with this comment, but on Friday you were speaking to a lady who was saying that she wanted to get involved and wanted to help and wanted to know where she could find information on how to volunteer, how to work on campaigns and stuff like that. I don't know if you remember it.
I do.
I know you've talked to a lot of people since. Here's what I will tell you real quickly. After 2008, after I volunteered for the Obama campaign, I found that there were a number of groups on Google Groups. If you go to groups.google.com, I'm going to give you the names of some of the groups that you can find that either are looking for volunteers or looking for paid assistance for campaigns. There's a group called Democratic Gain. There's a group called NOI, which is the National Organizing Institute. There is a group called Jobs That Are Left. All in one. There's another one I'm not remembering right now, but at the very least, those three will be able to get you where you're looking to be as far as if you're looking to volunteer for a campaign in your state, another state, anywhere around the country, even with progressive groups as well that are non-politically oriented.
Yeah.
They will sometimes put job listings up there as well.
I would add to that list just on the web. You can find Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org, ourrevolution.com. I'm pretty sure it is. MoveToAmend.org, the organization that's trying to get money out of politics. Indivisible, I'm not sure exactly what their website is, but the Indivisible organization has really grown. It was started by a bunch of people who were involved in the Obama campaign. There's a bunch of great groups out there and a bunch of great things going on that people need to know about.
Yeah, because I mean, as many people as we can get helping, I'm certainly, you know, I'm would love to see other, you know, new fresh faces and fresh blood in the
Amen. I'm going to have to check out groups.google.com, right? Thank you. I'm assuming you don't work for Google.
Groups.google.com, and then if you put in any of those names, you should be able to find. They'll send you daily, or they'll send you digest alerts at the end of the day, or they'll send you alerts every time a job offer opening comes up. Take your pick.
Interesting. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate the call. Tim in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
I'm just calling about you had the lady on just a little while ago, and she was talking about the Democratic position on climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on to the I went on and Google searched at the DNC platform.
Democrats.org is their website.
Yeah, climate change is number six under. There's like the first three have to do with economic. And economic justice and wages, and then one of them has to do with like treating people better, and then voting rights, and then there's climate change after that. So,
well, I think that that's going to change over time. This summer, we are seeing. I mean, it's just what's going on right now is absolutely incredible, and a lot of people are just stunned by it. And in fact, I had here it is right here. Darja Mail just sent me a clip. This is from, actually the source of this is arctic-news.blogspot.com. In 2014, the average temperature in the Arctic on July 6th, at this particular point in the Arctic, was 30 degrees Fahrenheit, right? 2014. In 2015, it went up to 43 degrees Fahrenheit. In 2016, it went to 47 degrees Fahrenheit. In 2017, it went to 57 degrees Fahrenheit. And this year, it's 61.9 degrees. The Arctic, I mean, and keep in mind, in 2014, it was below freezing. So we've got a serious problem here. And this is what's driving the insane weather across the world, at least across the Northern Hemisphere. So, Tim, I think that's going to jack up the list in terms of priority. Tim, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. And thank you all for being with us today. My apologies to the people on hold who haven't had a chance to get through. Call tomorrow. Look forward to hearing from you. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy, as President Obama used to love to say, as did Bernie, democracy is not a spectator sport. You've got to get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.